Liquid Death kind of feels like something that would have been an SNL commercial, but it's actually real and you can go buy it off the store shelf somewhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Shopify Masters. I'm one of your hosts, Serena Smith. Anti-marketing might just be your next best strategy. Andy Pearson is Vice President of Creative at Liquid Death, and he's responsible for transforming a simple can of water into a phenomenon worth more than $1 billion.
After we'd had some of these bigger successes, we'd get on calls with people and they'd go, God, water in a can. It's so obvious. I can't believe I didn't think of that.
With a punk rock attitude and campaigns that dare to go where no other brands have, Andy's team has more than just a creative edge. They have the power to turn heads and open wallets.
Make stuff that some people aren't going to like. That's the only way you're going to make something that a lot of people love.
This cultural rebellion has unleashed a cult following that flocks to every product and every social post. Andy, it's great to have you here today.
Great to be here.
Thanks for being with us. What is Liquid Death selling? Is Liquid Death selling water or are you selling something else?
We're much more than water. We think of ourselves as a healthy beverage platform. So we have mountain water, we have flavored sparkling water, and we have iced tea. And part of that is all about giving people healthier and more sustainable options without making it feel like that, right? It's water that presents itself like a beer or energy drink so that it doesn't feel like you're missing out. I think for decades, healthy brands have decided that they couldn't be compelling. They had to speak in a specific way to people and they had to look healthy and they had to feel healthy. And so what we did was just look at the fact that the most fun brands in the world also happen to be the ones that are maybe the worst for you, right? Beer and energy drinks and candies and chips. And these are always the brands that when you look at the Super Bowl have the most fun, crazy ads, right? And so we just sort of said, hey, what if we took that energy but just pointed it towards something that was better for you. And that's really what Liquid Death is all about.
It's radical, but it actually sounds so simple when you say it out loud.
Right.
You know, it's like, why does the healthy thing have to feel like spinach? Like, yeah. Of course, if you make it fun, it's going to be more compelling for people, yeah. Right? Speaking of, importantly, we should be having some fun of our own.
Okay.
Yeah. And let's give it a little ASMR, you know?
There you go. There you go.
That's, I think, the best sound on the planet. It's delicious.
10 calories. There you go.
It's delicious. You didn't join right at the onset of the company. You came when it was like starting to build a little bit of momentum, right?
Yeah, I joined in 2021, right as we were first starting to appear on store shelves. So it had been around, available about 2 years prior, but just on a DTC basis.
Mike, the founder and CEO, is a creative visionary of his own. You come in as VP of creative. Can you talk about like what that world building looked like from a creative perspective?
I mean, Mike, the brand really and the idea really came from his head. You know, he had the vision on it. He was the one that kind of had that idea you're talking about that was so simple, but no one had bothered to think of it yet. So I stepped into that seeing there was the tagline Murder Your Thirst and we had this amazing logo and there was so much work that had already been built. But to step into something that was really someone's pure vision and then to have to try to understand what that means and then not just take that baton and run with it, but like, you know, keep going. It was more difficult than I think I originally appreciated. But I think, 4 years later, hopefully I'm doing a pretty good job.
As a creative, it's like one thing to come into an operation where the CEO is functioning in more of like a traditional CEO capacity. And it's another thing to come in as like the head creative, but you've got this creative person above you. So what was that sort of learning curve for you as you tried to figure out, how do I get inside this guy's brain? And also, I would imagine you're like, I also got to like be true to my own creative sensibilities and I want to put my own stamp on this thing. Like, where do those two things meet?
Yeah, I think I've looked almost at this thing we're doing with Liquid Death almost from like an anthropological standpoint where the brand and the fandom and everything we're doing, it's more that it almost reveals itself over time than starting out with this like strict, rigid point of view of like, our brand talks like this. We say these words, but we don't say these words. That's really how brands are traditionally built, right? It's built in a very clinical way where you sit down and you decide these are the rules that govern our brand. And all that really becomes is that's sort of it deletes what you can do as a brand. And so the amazing thing was I was stepping into something that, I mean, still from day one, is we're building the ship as we're sailing it a bit. But that's the fun part of it, because we can adjust to whatever opportunities we see in front of us, we can adjust and adapt. And so for me, walking in where we don't have this brand book, we don't have any real codified sense of what it is, I think I kind of began to realize that that's actually the power of what we're doing, letting this thing really be organic. And to kind of what you said, I realized somewhat early on that if I could get, if he hears this, he'll be like, oh, that's what you're doing. If I could get inside Mike's head and understand his perspective on things, then I could start to understand what the brand was trying to do. And I think that's why Liquid Death feels so compelling to people, is because, again, it's not this like sterile thing that was conceived as like a hole in the market that we're going to fill with this one very engineered brand, right? It's sort of this amalgamation of like stuff that Mike likes and stuff that I like and stuff that other people in the marketing team and our sales team, and it's just sort of this combination of all these things that we're into. And that's what the brand is built on. So that's why we always get, you know, brand as feeling authentic. And it's like, oh yeah, because it's built from a bunch of people who like stuff and have specific senses of humor and want to do interesting things. And so that's what guides the brand, is sort of all the people behind it, and not this like PDF of all these rules that have been decided on somewhere else in a room somewhere.
Which is like pretty antithetical to creativity in the end, right? Creativity is like fundamentally about being in a sort of lawlessness.
Yes.
You know? And
Especially nowadays, especially the way you were, look at the way brands and businesses have to operate on social media. You have to have something that can feel living and organic, right? And so when I first started, I was working with Mike, we would be working on something and I would sit down and I'd like make a note to myself of like, oh, here's one of our rules. Here's something we believe or whatever. And my idea was I was going to build this brand book for my own sense, to kind of try to wrap my arms around what this thing was. Mm-hmm. And man, I worked on that thing for months and I kept writing stuff down. And every time I'd look at it, I'd be like, I f***ing hate this. And like every page, I was like, as soon as you put something that interesting down on paper and try to put it in a quippy little headline, it loses all the power and thing that makes it interesting. Mm-hmm. So I just kept looking at this document and getting angry every time as I'm trying to build this brand book. And so finally, I don't know, like 5 months in or so, I was just like, screw it. We're just not going to have it. We're just not going to have a brand book. And there was kind of this funny unlock for me that was an okay thing to do, because my kind of training had been that we have to have this guiding light. And then later on, that evolved into this realization that rather than being a brand, Liquid Death is kind of almost more of a character. And because we would write in these different tonalities that all came from the same place, but we would have different tones and different characters that we would write in, which is antithetical to like the way you ever build a brand, right? We have two logos we use on stuff. Like, you're not supposed to have a brand with two logos.
Right, it's like totally against the rules. Like, yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. But it was because that is, you're talking about like that kind of lawlessness, was it made sense to us and it was more fun that way. So kind of in the same way, I realized that rather than trying to build this brand, we thought of it more like a character that just gets inserted in these different situations, meaning like, hey, we want to talk about iced tea, or like, hey, we're going to do a partnership with Elf Cosmetics, or whatever the scene is. If we were writers on a show, we would just write for what that character would do in that scene. Mm-hmm. And so you're not trying to figure out like what marketing thing we could do. We're just trying to answer the question, what would Liquid Death do? And so that was like a big unlock for me, that there's just a right answer. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's like not something that's talked about in marketing. It's very subjective, and you can have opinions and you like this thing and somebody else likes this thing. But we've started to understand that there's like a right answer for what we should do, or what Liquid Death would do. And so it just means we all can look at that and agree that that's the right answer. And it takes all the subjectivity and all this like personal inputs out of it. And that's what we're trying to find, that thing. And so that's how we can function much more quickly and efficiently, by just like answering the question, what would liquid death do?
It's fascinating to hear you say this, because it is. It's like the screenwriting process.
Yeah.
Much more than it would be like the traditional like creative marketing process. It sounds like it like narrows the field for you. You're just like, oh yeah, well, what would this person do? Did you spend actual time sort of developing the idea of who this character is? Or was it something that you all just sort of like inherently understand?
Yeah, I think it's more that it revealed itself over time. Like I said, it's kind of, I honestly probably couldn't give you like a set of like beliefs, or I probably couldn't succinctly do it. But to the same point, like describe your friend or yourself, or describe another human being. Can you, and I don't want to get like super heady about it, but like imagine you had to describe all of a person to somebody else. It's really hard, because people are really complex and have a lot of different motivations and different parts of them. So I think that's in the same way, because this brand or character or whatever is built from a bunch of people, a bunch of us, it has all these weird quirks to it and these different sides that we can show when we want and when it makes sense. It's sort of more just like, you know, that person or that friend, and you can guess how your friend would do something in a situation. Or if you're in a writer's room, if you know the character, you know how they would react in a situation or what they would do. Or sometimes they might surprise you and do something unexpected. Like that's the fun of watching a show, is when a character shows you something that makes total sense, but you didn't see coming, because it's kind of part of them. And so we'll do a lot of stuff like that, that like a traditional brand would never allow itself to do, because again, it's working within these rigid rules and guidelines, and ours is much more organic in that way.
It's so fun to think about a brand as being a character. And also I think so smart to think about it from the perspective that you were saying, like allowing also that character to be dimensional, right? And to not just be functioning in one capacity, because that's not how human beings function.
And also think about it this way. It's like if TV shows were inhabited by brands the way that we marketers generally write for brands, the shows would f***ing suck. No one would watch those shows because they would be completely one-dimensional and boring, and you would know what they would do every time. But we're humans and we want to see interesting, flawed, weird people sometimes. And so I think it's just kind of showing that back to us a little bit.
You were talking about it taking the subjectivity out of things.
Yeah.
But you've also very much built your brand on comedy, which is like one of, I think, the most subjective things on the planet. You disagree?
I'm going to disagree there, because I think comedy is the least subjective thing, because comedy is based on two people looking at the same thing and agreeing that that's true. Mm. Like, I can't tell you a joke if we don't both agree that the subject matter and the conclusion that I'm coming to in that joke aren't true. That's why it floors me that more brands don't try to employ genuine humor, because it's the fastest way to actually reach somebody and have a really powerful moment with somebody. Is, I mean, laughter literally is an involuntary response to making a connection with somebody or something, right? And so I think like tastes obviously can be different, and there's some subjectivity in comedy, of course, but I think like the evolutionary origin of comedy is super objective in a way.
Why don't you think more brands employ comedy?
It's hard. It's scary. It's scary. And it necessitates a lot of putting yourself out there and trying things. And I think that's another part of the way that we work, is we're trying out stuff constantly. We're almost in the same way that a stand-up is getting up on stage and workshopping new material in front of an audience. We're just kind of doing that on our social feed constantly, right? A lot of brands will take work and then they'll pre-test it, and then it goes into focus groups, and it just kind of automatically gets watered down and the edges rounded off. And the way that we approach, we are scientific in some respects, but it happens after, because the best testing you can do is try something, put it out in the world, and see how people react. Trying something theoretical humor doesn't work. But if you can try something in practice, try it, see how people react to it, and then we take all that stuff back. And now we learned a little bit of something for the next time we're going to go out and do something. And so we're just trying to do a lot of stuff quickly as quickly and cheaply as possible to test things out and to kind of hedge our bets on what might work and what might not. But that's, again, not the way that a traditional marketing department or ad agency might work, right? They would work on these huge integrated campaigns for months at a time, dump millions of dollars into it, spend months developing it, and then you're like, here it is. Hope it works for the next 4 months for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done that. My background is I was at ad agencies for years. And I mean, I remember shooting something and then getting into the edit bay and being like, oh no, this isn't good.
Yeah.
And we sold them on this and this cost a lot of money and we have to live with this for, mm-hmm. you know, the season or whatever it is. And so this is, again, like the opposite of that thinking where let's rapidly try, let's almost prototype ideas live and then see how they work out.
I think also as a human being, it's just like actually so much more satisfying to be in a space of action versus
yes.
inaction and just constant planning.
It's fun for us.
Like, yeah.
That's why it's really fun to work on this is because it's way more satisfying for the people behind it. And I think we're genuinely having fun. And I think that's the best compliment I get from when I talk with people is when someone goes, man, you guys really look like you're having fun. I'm like, yes, it's working. Because if you feel like the people behind it are having a good time, you will too. So I always get really stoked when I hear people say that about it.
What are your metrics for success when you put a piece of marketing out there? You know, is it wide the viewership is? Is it the shares? Is it sort of like the way you're sort of feeling it travel around the zeitgeist? Like,
yeah.
What's giving you the indicators? And then what are you doing with that information? Are you parlaying that into like larger ads?
We can measure things differently. So like when you talk about organic social, which is what we built a lot, most of our business on, frankly, we have kind of a proprietary formula where we look at the different metrics from a post and then, you know, kind of analyze and rank how those perform against something else. And so then we can obviously take that data back and decide like, hey, we learned that, you know, if we partner with this type of brand or this celebrity, like, hey, there feels like there's even more juice here, you know. So that's one way, you know, you get higher shares are way more valuable than a like, you know, comment. So you can kind of begin to rank some of these things and then really figure out how well something performs. And we can tell usually within the first couple minutes that when we post something, how well it's going to perform.
Liquid Death has this like almost mythical reputation for just like flinging out hit after hit.
Yeah.
Have you had some things that haven't really performed?
Yeah. You know, not many. But yeah, you know, here and there, there'll be stuff that don't go as well as we wanted them to. But again, because the whole point of the way we work, we talk about like small bets. So again, we can afford to have a failure every once in a while because we didn't spend that much time or money on this thing. And likewise, when we have a huge hit, we also didn't spend much time or money on it, right? So as long as we keep stacking the hits and then we have a couple of failures, like, man, you're going to, same thing, like you're a comedian, you're not going to have all your jokes land. And then you just learn how to phrase that thing differently next time, how to compose it differently. And suddenly you unlock a new way to work. So we're fine with the little flops here and there.
Yeah. Good learning experiences.
Absolutely.
Your Super Bowl ad, on the other hand, was a sizably larger bet.
Sure.
Did the process feel different? Did the stakes feel different? Or did you sort of approach it in the same fashion?
It's funny. When we were on set, I remember just being like, God, I hate knowing that this is a Super Bowl ad. But at the same time, I think it is obviously a big bet for us. But there's a lot of strategy that went in from, you know, looking from where we're at out of business, what our goals were. It made a lot of sense to jump in and do that spot. But then also, not to denigrate anybody else's work, but I think people are tuning into the Super Bowl to be entertained by the ads, right? A lot of people are looking for that. And so we've gotten this place with Super Bowl ads where they're so over the top trying to entertain you with these like flashy, shiny things that for us, that's of course like an opportunity to do the opposite of that, which was like, let's make a dumb looking beer commercial with a jingle with no celebrities that feels like it's something totally else and kind of punk people that don't know what Liquid Death even is. And so I think that's like a more meta level of entertainment. Because if you know who we were at that point, it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, it's Liquid Death. They're making it look like a beer commercial. And some people think that it's not. And then if you don't know who we are, you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
How are they showing all these people drinking these cans on the Super Bowl? And then at the end, you know, you learn. And we, you know, anecdotally, I heard so many stories about people who were like, oh, I was in my living room and I was with my aunt and she had no idea what it was. And then I turned to her and then we talked about Liquid Death for 10 minutes, right? And so that's part of the fun is where the brand is always kind of like revealing itself in these interesting ways that are unexpected that make your interaction with it much deeper when you learn that it's just water or iced tea in a can or whatever. You have a much deeper kind of relationship at that point because you've had this flip in perception. So, you know, again, so big bet, but we wanted to make something that really made sense in that context. And it was, according to EDO, it was the number three most effective ad in the game. So maybe didn't make like the ad meter, but that's not what we're chasing.
From a personal perspective, how does that feel for you? Do those moments, do they hit? Do you savor them? Like, is that what matters, you know?
I guess on a personal level, having spent so much time in advertising and marketing, I've seen so many things done wrong or done the way that it's sort of assumed that it's supposed to be done that I think we personally take real joy in proving that there's other ways to think about this stuff and kind of inventing, again, new ways to think about brand and media and all this stuff. Like I always say, I think Liquid Death, the premise is there's always a better way to do something. Mm. I think like if you go back to our origin story of, hey, what if junk food didn't have all the best, most fun marketing? What if healthy food didn't have to suck in the way it's branded? What if instead of putting water in plastic bottles, it was put in infinitely recyclable aluminum cans? Like these are just sort of some little observations on like, hey, there might be a better way to do this, but we haven't bothered to pull our heads out of the sand and think about it for a second. And so I think that's the fun of what we're doing with Liquid Death is looking at every decision along the way from brand to business to product development and saying like, hey, what if there was another way that someone hasn't thought of yet? Mm-hmm. So that's what I find gratifying. I mean, I'm a creative, I hate that term, but that's in my title. But like the whole business is run in a very creative way where every decision can be made in a more interesting way that maybe someone hasn't decided to think of yet.
Yeah. And it sounds like it's sort of just on a really simplistic level, like it sort of just necessitates questioning a lot of things that we just take at face value, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Why is all the water in plastic? You know, it's just these things that we're so used to having as like the sort of mainstream accepted culture that we don't stop to ask the question so often.
It was crazy. When I started, we would get on calls and people, we would have to, because we were so small and no one knew what Liquid Death was. And so be like, hey, we're from Liquid Death. And, you know, we put water in cans and we'd have to explain what it is. And we would have people like straight up to our faces be like, no one's going to drink water out of a can because we'd been trained for literally decades that you only drink water out of plastic bottles. And I could go into that whole thing. It's all because water had been marketed based on purity and no one had decided what if it wasn't marketed on purity. And in order to be pure, you have to see it. And you could go way back and say there's some sort of like evolutionary thing of like drinking scummy pond water that you know, if you can't see, you don't know that it's pure. But meanwhile, you go into a convenience store and grab whatever energy drink off of the shelf, which has God knows what chemicals in it and is in an opaque can. And you don't question that. But we get on these calls and people are like, water out of cans. That's not the way God intended to do it or whatever. Then a very funny thing happened where, I don't know, a year and a half in, after we'd had some of these bigger successes and had started to make a name and did something with Martha Stewart or whatever, we'd get on calls with people and they'd go, God, water in a can. It's so obvious. I can't believe I didn't think of that. And it just flipped from like, this is the dumbest idea to this is the most obvious idea that no one had thought of yet, right? And I think everything can be stupid until one day it doesn't become stupid. someone has seen something that no one else saw. And for a long time, and you can talk to any founder about this, it's like people are going to say your idea is stupid. And if you know that you have something magic in your hand, one day that's going to flip. I mean, I remember when iPad came out, when you know, Apple announced the iPad, and everyone was like, everyone thought it was the dumbest product and you didn't know what to do. And now it's literally sitting on like every coffee shop a counter, right? It's ingrained in all of our lives in an amazing way. And so ideas sometimes like that just take a little time to catch on.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I can also see why it can be a tough proposition in moments, right? Because it's like you have so much belief in this thing, but if people are telling you it's crazy, you hope that you travel around the bend to that flipped perception where everybody gets it.
Yeah.
But there's always the chance that that doesn't happen.
But it's fun. I mean, I think that's what makes the brand fun, is it like it feels like we have a little chip on our shoulder in a way, and in that like you're kind of rooting for us because we are doing something different. And so I think that's a lot of the fire in our bellies to prove that like this idea that sounds super dumb is actually pretty good.
Okay, but you don't really have a chip on your shoulder anymore. You are culturally like this great underdog story, right? Mm-hmm. But now you're big, right? And so that changes things. Like, you know, it's like sometimes you see with comedians, right?
Yeah.
When they're down and out and their back is up against the wall, they're hilarious. There's a sense of urgency there, right?
Sure.
You know, and then they get big, the stakes change, their life changes, right? And it can be a little bit more difficult to sort of retain that like original energy.
Sure.
Do you guys find yourselves running into that at all as you've grown?
No, I mean, the way that I like to think about it is we just have so many more kind of colors to paint with on our palette. Like when we started, you know, again, we're just knocking on doors, hoping people would talk to us and trying to cobble together stuff on our own. And now the really cool flip is that we have all kinds of brands and celebrities and all kinds of people coming to us, like actively wanting to do something with us because we have created this kind of cultural thing. So it's more that we just have more opportunities, bigger opportunities to take our weirdo brand of humor and satire to the world in the kind of a bigger way than we ever got to before.
Fun for you.
Yeah, it's great. I'm having a blast. We're all having fun.
I mean, and to that end, like having more colors to paint with, you guys spent a really long time not really putting any substantial money into paid media up until very recently. Why was it that it changed, and why was it changing in that moment?
We're a startup, and so every dollar we spend has to be $10 out, right? I mean, rather than taking all that money and putting into media and making ads that people are just going to want to ignore and are being forced to see, what if we took that money and just made more things that are actually entertainment that people really genuinely want to see? And so that's how you really take like these tiny budgets and make something exponentially bigger than you ever could. So yeah, for us, that was how we grew the brand so quickly, was by doing things that were all about, you know, on social and earned media and that sort of style of work. And we continue to do it. And now we just have, again, we have like a bigger platform to do that work on. You know, we have started to run some, you know, media here and there. And the wild thing that we see is like, hey, this thing that we designed to do really well on the internet organically, when we turn that into a 30-second TV spot and run that on CTV or broadcast or whatever, like, hey, that way outperforms anything that's an industry metric because it's designed to be entertainment first. Just because we're using media now, it doesn't change the style of stuff we make. We still want to make stuff that people want to see that's going to do well online or whatever. But then when that gets translated into these other spaces, it outperforms everything else still.
This business and the success of this company has in many parts been built off of the notion of doing things differently. Mm-hmm. You come from a more traditional marketing background. You were a copywriter for years. Do you think that there's utility and value, especially for people out there who are starting businesses of their own, trying to develop creative ideas, in knowing the rules so that you know how to break them?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think liquid death for a lot of us that have there aren't too many of us, but for those of us that have like a more formal marketing background, it's like catharsis because a lot of the stuff we do is poking marketing in the eye. People can have all different tastes in music and entertainment and TV that they watch. The media landscape is so fractured, but the one thing that unites all people is they still are going to get marketed to constantly. And so I think in some weird way, poking at marketing is a cultural touchstone that we can always play off of. So having that background and having seen, like I said, all the ways it's done wrong and all the stuff that you're like, you've seen clients mess up or you've just, you know, been embarrassed to say that you work in advertising because you know that we're the number 7 on the bottom of least respected jobs in the country. There's like a lot of self-loathing, I think, in marketing, and there should be because it sucks. And so we've taken that kind of energy and we're like, let's turn that into something that is positive and actually give something back. Because I think marketing is so extractive in practice. It's like, hey, we're going to generally force you to watch something or force something on you, and then we're going to ask you to buy our thing. We just want to make something that people like. And of course, we can like weave in certain things that we want you to understand about the beverage or whatever we're doing. But like, we want to make something first and foremost that we think people are actually going to love. And I think that's flipping that extractive nature on its head. Having to have that understanding of how that relationship has traditionally worked allows us to flip that. And then the other people that we have in the building are, you know, people that had their own adult shows on Adult Swim, or people, you know, a guy who has been in like a touring punk band since he was 16 years old, or, you know, we've hired pro snowboarders and all kinds of musicians and all kinds of other people that just understand entertainment. So we have a really great mashup of a couple of us that really understand the marketing side, and then a couple of us that are just insane. And I think like together, that's where the magic lies. Is we have a lot of fun kind of like playing both sides of that, you know?
Where do you go to get creative inspiration?
Just stuff. I mean, yeah, it's everything. Like everything. I can't tell you the last time I like referenced an ad as an idea or something. I mean, I think we take a lot of inspiration from places like SNL. We always reference them a lot. I mean, think of all the best stuff that they've done over the years. It's all, a lot of it is all the commercial parodies, right? That's because again, it's like the thing that everyone has seen. Everyone has seen that ad before, and now we're going to make fun of it. That's a really fun thing to do. And so in a lot of ways, like Liquid Death kind of feels like a something that would have been an SNL commercial, but it's actually real and you can go buy it off the store shelf somewhere. So a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff like that. I think, you know, we grew up consuming Adult Swim and Jackass and going to Warped Tour and that stuff. But I think, again, it's like we're sort of pulling in all these pieces of culture into whatever we're doing and then kind of regurgitating it through our worldview. So whether that's like we do something with a Bert Kreischer or Travis Barker, or we go and do something with like Martha Stewart or Depend or whatever. I think like we kind of get to ingest all these pieces of culture and then represent it in a way that feels familiar, but it feels like it's kind of coming from this weird other dimension where Liquid Death exists.
Your marketing is like so delightfully unhinged.
Yeah.
And yet somehow it seems to like toe, but not cross the lines somehow.
Yeah.
Do you guys internally have like an understanding and assessment of where that line lives? This is as far as we can get, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, there's stuff that we will and won't do. And I think we're very mindful. We don't want to be offensive to people and we, you know, don't want to be mean or make fun of anyone. So there's all kinds of stuff that
It's not mean.
Yeah. But I think also what you're kind of getting at is like, there is this unhinged nature, but I think there's this also, this other thing that we get to do, which is a lot of our work will like present something, a dumb idea, and then spend the next 60 seconds or whatever it is trying to convince you how smart that idea is. It kind of goes back to like everything is stupid until it isn't. So like a good example is we did a collab with Depend for this pit diaper. The idea came from this thought that like people love drinking Liquid Death at concerts. We're huge with music venues and we have a great partnership with Live Nation. But maybe the problem is we have inadvertently caused this thing where if you're in the pit, you need to pee more often because you're more hydrated.
Yeah.
So like, let's solve that with this idea of a pit diaper, which is a pleather studded diaper you can pee in the pit and look cool. And on the surface, it's a really stupid idea when it comes out. But then we spend the whole rest of this video or the email or whatever touch point this is really making a case for this really stupid idea. And by the end, you arrive at I think, as the being on the receiving end, you arrive at being like, all right, they've kind of convinced me in this idea that a minute ago I thought was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen. And I'm kind of sold. It's sort of what keeps it from being like the fully unhinged. Because I don't think it's unhinged. I think it's almost the opposite, where we just are starting with an unhinged premise, but then trying to treat that thing as totally normal. And I think that's where like the really interesting, trying to do something simultaneously stupid and really smart. Mm-hmm. That's always like my kind of humor. That's the kind of stuff I like. And I think it's not just like wild for wild's sake.
Yeah.
I think that it like appeals to kind of a smarter sensibility in people.
It makes me also, to bring it back to like comedians,
yeah,
it makes me think of how the great comedians approach their craft too, which is like when they're doing it, they're taking it seriously,
yeah,
right? Like for it to play as funny, you can't be approaching it from like an unhinged, zany fashion.
Right.
Then it just comes out as farce or fakery or something, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't hit as authentic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's part of the trick. My least favorite day of the year is April Fool's Day because all the brands get to trot out their social media posts. It's like, look at this thing that we did. And obviously it's fake, but it's safe to say it on this one day when like, wouldn't it be crazy if we did this really unhinged thing? But we're not really going to do that because that would be crazy. But it's safe for us to say it, right? It's like how brands tiptoe into comedy in the way that they feel is safe for them. But we're just like, every single day we want to bring something real that is, we're not going to couch it with like April Fool's. It's just going to be a thing that we actually do. And you can actually buy the pit diaper on our website for $75. You know,
and they did.
Yeah, and sold out in 2 hours. You know, so it's like, it's way more fun to never blink or never give a wink. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's how a lot of brands approach humor, is like, they're always trying to be like, just kidding.
Yeah, we got to let you know we're kidding.
To your point, yeah. Like, if you're a stand-up, you can't do that. It the magic dissipates immediately, so.
But it takes a really supreme confidence.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it takes practice. And it goes back to like us just trying it a bunch. You know, we've gotten better at it by workshopping. And you have to continually put yourself out there to be able to do it.
I mean, do you have advice for people out there who are trying to build brands of their own and they want to be employing comedy, given that it can be scary and you do have to get your reps up? Like, what is your advice for that sort of development process of voice and creativity?
Yeah, it's just try a lot of stuff. And you can't be afraid to fail. You have to go and do open mic nights, like the version of that as a brand. And you have to learn from that. And the other thing I think is that a lot of brands are very scared of, particularly with the way that like social media works, they're terrified of a backlash. And we even hear that with people that we collaborate with. A lot of times we have to hold their hands and say, because they're like, what if there's a backlash? And we always will say, we've never, in the history of all the things we've done, we have never had any incident with a campaign or idea that we've launched where everyone lost their minds and canceled us or whatever. And again, it goes back to us being really smart about knowing where that line is. But someone made this analogy to me once and I thought it was so brilliant, which is like looking at a comment section where you have five people shitting on your brand or whatever you've done is the equivalent of like walking into a soccer stadium and you have 10,000 people all cheering for you. And then there's a section in the top row with five people going, boo, right?
Yeah.
But like human nature, we kind of look at the negative comments, mm-hmm, and don't take in all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the way a lot of marketers or brands act, is that like, oh no, five people said something mean about us. We can't do that again. And you just have to understand that it's a proportions game. And if you're making great stuff, probably not everyone's going to like it. It's good. Like when we launch stuff and people don't like it, we're stoked. Like sometimes for a while we would launch stuff and we would get no negative feedback and we're like, what are we doing wrong?
Totally.
when we launched the thing with Martha Stewart, we were really preparing her team because, you know, we were worried that there might be something, you know, some of her fans would take it negatively. And we had her literally chopping off people's hands and making candles with them that she was selling on her website on martha.com, which is amazing. And
she's such a G.
And she, yeah. And she, and zero negative feedback. And we were like, oh no, we didn't push it far enough because everybody liked it. And I think that's another thing is like, make stuff that some people aren't going to like. That's the only way you're going to be able to make something that a lot of people love.
You guys have grown so much since you joined the company and it's only getting bigger and bigger, which means that the stakes also get higher. It seems like you've been able to retain this culture, you and Mike and the other people on the team, this culture of fun and levity and positivity. But like, are there moments where it feels like tough and stressful? Or is it just
no, it's like, it's like we're having an argument over the color of the clown blood. You know, it's like those are the kind of, that's the kind of stress that we're dealing with. I think, like you said, I mean, it's getting bigger. It's stakes are high, but as long as you kind of keep your head down and you're just doing what you believe is right, I don't think it gets harder. I've never had a job where it's like more intense in the moment that I'm in it, but it's less stressful the moment we walk away. I think like anything that you do when you're playing music or you're playing a sport, you should feel that intensity and then you can leave it and walk away from it. And I think that's sort of how it is. It feels like we're playing in some weird, crazy band together. And we all are friends through it because we're all kind of co-creating something.
And there's like, there's depleting intense and then there's like energizing intense.
Yes, correct.
You know?
Yes.
So if you can stay in the energizing intense zone, then it's like life-giving.
Yeah. And because again, going back, like I've seen how creative departments and marketing departments and just businesses, how they shouldn't be run and how there's so much inefficiency in that. And so every step of the way, I'm trying to keep things as efficient as we possibly can and as light as we can, because that's where it really cooks. And it goes back to like the character thing. In some ways, it's done out of laziness, like not laziness, but like thinking of a character makes it more easy for us to arrive at mm-hmm. the idea way more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. We started our own production company called Death Machine, where we just produce everything that we make. So rather than having to outsource it to other people, we shoot it all ourselves. We have a team of producers in-house that help bring everything to life, because it was kind of like, well, we can probably do it faster and cheaper and in our style if we do it ourselves. And then at a certain point that became like, well, man, every time we are doing something, we have to get like a director involved and do that search, and we have to get them up to speed and pay them. And then they want to do other things that we know aren't, you know, going to mm-hmm. help the final product, but we have to be nice to them and not shitting on directors. They're amazing. At a certain point, like it became like, well, what if we just did it all ourselves? And so now for the most part, with like the exception of the Super Bowl spot this year, we direct or co-direct every piece ourselves, like just because it's faster and easier that way. It means that we get every step of the process from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And every piece along the way is still part of that creative process from the very beginning all the way through the shoot, through the edit. It's not that compartmentalized, like, here's the idea, then it gets passed off, then my part's done, then it gets passed off to these people, then it gets passed off to this. It's much more of like a spectrum where we allow ourselves on set to improv a lot more than any set I've ever been on, because we like know that there's going to be magic in us making stuff together. So by owning that whole process, we really get to make something that is kind of genuinely us and genuinely Liquid Death from start to finish.
Beautiful, Andy. Cheers to you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you so much. We have to take a sip. You know it's bad luck
okay.
if you don't.
Yeah.
Thanks to my guests, Andy Pearson, VP of Creative at Liquid Death. I'm your host, Serena Smith. Click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on all of our future episodes. And we'll see you next time.